Welcome to the Power of Two podcast on all things diabetes for healthcare professionals who are working with people with diabetes at the grassroots. I'm Jane Lehman and I'm a registered nurse credentialed diabetes educator.
And I'm Kiralee Chambers, advanced practicing pharmacist and credentialed diabetes educator.
We welcome you back, and this is our third podcast, and hope you checked the last one with the information that you can also find at www.edhealth.com.au and just put in a search for P2 podcast. That way you can find the previous editions as well as the links and information that we pop up for you each time we do our podcast. Kiralee, we decided this week to cover the Australasian Diabetes Congress. We thought that we might cover it in a bit of a different way because after covering the Roche Day in more detail, some of the themes that yes, we'll be talking about through the conference were already covered to some extent. We would just pick out a few themes over the next month or so of podcasts and link it with some of the information that is coming up in the conversations, discussions, and work that we're doing around diabetes.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea rather than try and go through each of the lectures and the information sessions that we went through. It's probably and more relevant to our day-to-day work if we do that, do you think?
Yeah.
And that way we can also link the summaries in the on the website.
Yeah. So that you can find out a bit more about what was in the conference, what we'll do instead is put up links on the website P2 podcast page, links to some of the blogs that were written by people with diabetes in Diabetes Voice who all attended the conference and acted as a journal board and shared a lot of information and tips and ideas from what they were all hearing. So you can go and have a look at it there.
Yeah, that's a good idea, I think.
First off, we thought we would share with you something that happened on the Tuesday night, the conference.
Yes. Let's do that, because people don't understand that less than 1% of people with type 1 get a complication called hypoglycemic unawareness, which means that people are not able to understand when their blood glucose levels are dropping low. So I was diagnosed with that about 20 years into having type 1, which again means that I'm unaware of my blood glucose levels dropping low. It usually doesn't have any impact on me when I'm awake, but of course new research would show that people are unable to respond when they're asleep, and they always used to think of course that was just because you're asleep, but they now are starting to understand that their body has the inability to release glycogen stores from the liver because you're horizontal. So of course when you're lying down.
You told me that recently and I had not heard that before.
So it's a combination of things usually, but also of course because you're asleep you have the inability to treat yourself.
So does that mean we need you to sleep like a bat in future, maybe?
Yeah.
Strapped to a wall, so you're upright?
Yes.
Because
I'm not sure that would work either. But
no, because we did end up having a bit of an event around the Hypo One awareness. On the Tuesday night, Kiralee and I were blissfully asleep after having had a big day. We were certainly walking a lot more than usual. I would have to say I don't think you were getting enough food where we were going.
Yeah, and that's always an issue, again, having multiple autoimmune disorders. So I have four that are recognised. One of which, fortunately, is celiac disease.
Yeah.
So I have to stay away from gluten. And so that poses some problems for the caterers. Unfortunately, we were at an event that night, the Tuesday night, where they basically forgot to cater for me.
Having been to a lot of these events with you now, this is not unusual.
No, it's certainly not.
And I know that you advise everybody.
Yes, I advise them in writing. They were advised 4 weeks, 2 weeks, 3 days, and on the day.
So from what we can gather, not the organisers.
No.
It happens in the kitchen.
Correct.
So we're not having any comment about any of the companies that organise sessions. They are very diligent around passing that information on, because in the diabetes world, we do have a lot of people with special eating needs.
Yes.
Because we have a lot of people with type 1 diabetes,
that have other
chronic conditions.
Yeah. Have other autoimmune conditions. Mm. Once you get one autoimmune disorder, it happens frequently that you get another. And once you have three, it's continued to get more. So
daunting.
Yeah, so it's well known that there's never one reason for causing hypo, and a major hypo is defined as where you need third-party intervention, either to help you treat or a glucagon and or paramedics.
Mm.
So again, there's a combination. We'd walked a lot, both on the Monday before and the Tuesday, and I had taken that into account, certainly. I had been sick a couple of weeks before, so I dropped a couple of kilos of weight, which again I'd taken into account. But then there'd also been the food restrictions, for want of a better word. And normally when I have not had enough food, I would go home and eat more, going to bed. But I didn't have the capacity to do that because we were staying in a hotel where there wasn't the ability to do that. And my blood glucose level was fine going to bed. However, I think it was a combination of those things. And the other thing that had occurred is I wear continuous glucose monitoring, which will turn my insulin pump off. But a new sensor had gone in that morning.
Yep.
And I also have lupus, which again is an autoimmune disorder, and my lupus doesn't like the continuous glucose monitor going in for the first 24 hours. So it's not as accurate as it can and should be for the first 24 hours. Now, I took that into account as well, and while the monitor turned my pump off, it didn't do it in time to stop me dropping very low.
Because it wasn't reading it as accurately
as it should.
Yeah.
And I always know that, and I always take that into account. But those four or five separate things combined to cause a major hypo.
Yeah. Okay, so cue CDE masterclass for yours truly. Because Kiralee has learnt to live with hypo unawareness, that's why we share. Because
Correct.
You can't stay by yourself, because you need that extra support sometimes. That was good. Kiralee prepared me beautifully. She showed me the bag of, the enormous bag, I might say, of
Kiralee's emergency supply.
When I saw that you were non-responsive, but you weren't unconscious, I could see what was happening, and I just went into automatic mode and thought, okay, just keep you cool. You've just got to assess. You've got to work it out. Where's the bloody glucagon? Sorry. Not only am I trying to keep Kiralee safe, but I'm trying to work out where the hell we'd put it, even though you'd shown me. I tried to do a blood glucose reading. What did I get? Ketone strips.
Yeah.
So I kind of was just looking at what I had there.
I assume my ketones were zero, given I was probably very low.
I don't know. And then I thought, okay, should I look for the glucose? I thought you... Idiot, no, just she's like out for the count, get the glucagon. So because you prepared me so well, found the bag by the side of the bed, and hands are shaking, get out the glucagon, thinking, oh, thank God we've got glucagon. And then in my head I'm thinking, I hope she's got enough stores. I hope the glucagon's going to work. So you know, you've got this internal monologue that's happening the whole time that you're doing this. And meantime, my good friend is looking in a bad way. Because I've had to manage a lot of Sarah's seizures, that prepared me. Imagine what I would have been like otherwise. Got the glucagon, was so proud that I mixed it without dropping it.
Yeah.
Without losing half the dose.
Yeah, because we teach loved ones of people with diabetes on insulin to do this, but there's no backup support. The first time that my carer ever had to do this for me, he was in a state of panic. He'd never given anyone an injection before, and I had a seizure. He injected the water down the sink and then went, oh my goodness, now I don't have anything.
Oh,
lucky I have backup glucagons. He just went and got another one. But again, you teach people to do this not understanding how panicked they will be at the time. And for you, this is the first time, even though you've educated people for 35 years about diabetes, this is the first time you've actually had to inject someone.
And this is why we were calling it the masterclass.
Yes.
And I'm very glad I passed it, because I gave the glucagon into your arm and called the ambulance. Now, what's interesting with the calling of the ambulance from a hotel room in Darling Harbour is that Darling Harbour isn't a suburb.
This is news to me.
And I didn't know that.
It's news to me.
So I ring the 000 from, well, you've got to get a line out first. Ring 000. Oh, maybe I did it on my phone. I don't know what I did. I can't remember some of it. Did the 000 and you get the person on the line. Now, they won't dispatch someone until they know the suburb and where you are.
Which is so fair enough.
I was in there saying I was at the Oaks in Darling Harbour. And they were saying, what suburb is that? And I don't know what state they were in either, because remembering they're not in the same state quite often anymore where they do the calls from. So I'm trying to prevent the rising panic. I don't know the address. That will never happen to me again because I will have the address written down wherever I go to a hotel now, because if they don't know the address, they can't dispatch someone. So she was talking to me and I explained that what we've done so far. I just wanted them to come. And so we looked on the back of the door, and I'd looked there before when I had the phone, but you know, in my panic, I couldn't see the address. And it was in really tiny writing. So again, this stuff is serious. But you still weren't coming round.
Because glucagon can take up to, again, to 10 or 15 minutes. But from what I've been told, because again, I've never experienced it, because I am not conscious at the time, 10 or 15 minutes can feel like a very long time.
It is. And I've had that with Sarah's seizures and things in the past, so at least I felt more prepared. The lady on the phone was brilliant. She said, okay, now we've got that dispatch, ring downstairs to the lobby and tell them. The Oaks were fantastic, the staff that night. They had someone at the door waiting for the ambulance, and they also had two people come up and check things out. Then they were at the lift, and then the two most wonderful paramedics in the world arrived at the door. Now, New South Wales Paramedic Service, kudos to you, because these gentlemen were word perfect in their language around diabetes. You were starting to come round. As they came in through the door, I had managed to get you to sit up and you were ready to be able to take some jelly beans. And it was about 10-15 minutes. Mm. And so you were starting to munch on jelly beans. And so I was feeling a lot better when your little eyes opened and you looked at me. I was even happier, everyone, a little bit later, because she started making jokes. But what do you remember?
So I do remember waking up and turning the light on and thinking, I'm too low to treat myself, I need to wake you up. I do remember speaking, although I don't know that it was words. And then I remember thinking, I'm in serious trouble. And really, that's all I remember. I have memories of people being in the room, one in a suit. Not the paramedic. So
he was the manager.
Manager, so I have vague.
Because he looked over you as you were starting to become conscious.
So I do have vague recollections of a guy in a dark suit, and then really not any proper recall until.
Did you remember me?
I do remember you being in the room at times, but really the first proper recall was the band-aids on my fingers, because they were like glucose. A check, they gave me a band-aid, and I remember looking at my hand and thinking, why do I have all these band-aids
and
on my
hand?
And
that's what we were laughing about.
Yeah, the most recall I have, and that was a long way in.
Yeah, because you then also had some glucose gel.
Yes, and a fair amount of jelly beans, and that would have been a good half an hour to three quarters of an hour after the glucagon had been injected.
So when you actually came round from the glucagon, your level was 1.2.
1.2, yeah.
So what would have it... I mean, I hate to think what it was.
It would have been under 1, probably.
Yeah.
But I don't often speak about the severe hypos, and it is very exhausting because it takes a lot of energy to be replenished the next day. But given the fact that there is so much misinformation about people bring this on themselves or they're not managing their diabetes well, and that there was a lot of chatter at the conference about people feeling that it's okay to talk about complications, I thought it a good platform to speak openly about that.
Mm.
But people continue to say, why did that happen? And how come and what did you do? And there was a whole lot of chatter and re-education around, I don't do anything to cause this. This is something that I've lived with now for over 15 years. And what prompted this was a combination of events all just clashed together.
And it was quite a complicated group of things.
Yes.
When you take into account the sensor. And the sensor was interesting because until 2 days before this occurred,
yes,
we were having conversations on Twitter around you not knowing from your application for special
consideration. Because I have been self-funding for 6 years, the CGM, continuous glucose monitor, and I had applied under the National Diabetes Service Scheme to get it paid for, because it's not cheap to do, and I had committed funds, obviously, because that's the only thing that keeps me alive. I do have vague recollections of the sensor alarming, so it had obviously alarmed, it had obviously turned my pump off, and that is what saved my life.
Yeah.
Had it not done that, I probably wouldn't have woken up, because I certainly don't think either of us would have woken up.
We had have been in two different bedrooms.
Oh, absolutely.
Like we have been previously, yes, in some places.
That is the first serious hypo I've had since I've been self-funding CGM. So that's the first one in 6 years that I've had.
So the really good thing is that because it got approved a couple of days before,
correct,
we are able to start a sensor 24 hours before.
Because I'm not having to try and drag those sensors out for as long as I possibly can. You know, like they're $100 each. They're not cheap, and the transmitters are not cheap either. So I won't have to try and wear them for as long as I possibly can. I can start a second sensor. It can get a chance to wet while I'm still wearing another sensor. In theory, this potentially won't happen again.
And that's what really hit me, was that we were in shock. So, you know, we managed to keep you home because the paramedics stayed longer. We got your levels up. You ate some food. And then they were brilliant because they were then happy to let you sign saying, no, it's all right, I'll stay here.
Yes.
It's one of those tests I'm really glad I passed, mate, because it was a really good insight for me. One that the scary thing is that a lot of things went right.
Yes.
That night as well.
Yeah, that is very true. And I always worry about someone who is on insulin that never has a hypo, because it means that their levels are elevated. But we also should be open and honest that this happens, and it's probably happening more frequently than people are willing to admit, because there's so much shame associated and so much guilt associated with this. And it's not people's fault that 35 or 20 years plus into having type 1 or sometimes type 2 that people lose their awareness of having low blood glucose.
It's also the downside of tight management.
It is.
You know, if we want to keep people, increasingly everyone's talking about time in target. Well, that automatically increases hypo risk. And yes, what causes hypo unawareness is a combination of things to do with how often you have hypos, but it's also around the glucagon response in people in their pancreas.
So it's the loss of alpha. So there's beta cells which produce insulin, and then there's alpha cells which produce glucagon in response to dropping blood glucose levels. And there is now a theory that some people lose alpha cell function, which is why islet cell transplants work, because they don't just transplant the beta cells, they transplant the alpha cells as well.
Yeah.
And the alpha cells produce glucagon in response to dropping blood glucose levels.
We might even try and put an article up.
Yeah.
We'll have a look for one. We'll try and put one up with this week's edition. The Wednesday, I think we were in shock. We turned up at the conference. I don't think, to be fair, we learned anything much on Wednesday.
My brain was a bit fried.
And we needed to also get the prescription, because this is the other thing. You're out, you're away from where you are. We needed to get some glucagon because we were not comfortable with going to sleep the next night without the trusted glucagon.
Well, the irony was when I got home, I found a second, because I always pack two.
Yeah.
I know I always pack two. And the irony was when I got home, I found the second glucagon.
Where was it?
It was in my backup. I always take two. I knew I'd take, but given the fact that we were looking for it on the Wednesday and my brain was a bit fried, but we did end up going and getting a second glucagon.
And we had South Australian rep.
Henry from Novo Nordisk.
He was like amazing. A knight in shining armour.
He was great.
He helped us enormously, and so kudos to Novo for helping us out with all of that, because everyone, I have to say, was showing a lot of care and concern around what we'd both been through, because we very much were a team, and it's been very useful to be able to debrief each other with the experience as well.
Mm.
So you can't beat that kind of thing for learning, I'm afraid.
No, it's nothing like hands-on experience.
And the masterclass was passed. She lived to Kate for another day. That's right. I need my buddy to do the podcast. And we also thought that because of the whole concept of acute complications, that we should balance it out with a little bit further discussion around the chronic complications that were being discussed, because there was some really interesting chats again around language and how we make people feel around the diabetic foot.
We talked about the word complication last week on the second podcast and whether we should be continuing to call it complication or whether we should be calling it a health outcome. I don't care, to be honest.
Yeah, or associated health issues.
For those who didn't listen to it, please go back and have a listen. We talked about last week was that we ensure we're not threatening people with the word complication, and that we ensure that we don't use fear tactics. That's the most important thing. And we use the word complication or health outcome in the right context. That's what we decided last week.
Yeah, and there's some new guidelines that are out that we heard about at the conference, but we also heard about at a session we went to last night that Ergo Medical put on, like a round table to discuss how we can do better with preventing foot ulcers in people with diabetes.
Yeah, so Ergo Medical, their tag is healing people, which I really like.
I like it too.
I like that. So again, it's about person-centered care, not just the ulcer or not just the foot. They look at the whole person, so person-centered, which I really think is a great catchphrase.
And that was the real focus at the foot disease session we went to at the conference. Talking about complications, diabetic foot disease in Australia. There were four speakers and there was a lot of conversation around how it happens, but also about taking the pressure off the foot when there's
and
an
weight
issue.
Bearing.
And one of the things I took home from that was the whole conversation around young Aboriginal people who have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes when they're young. So by the time they're in their 20s, they're facing foot conditions, but also renal disease.
Yes.
And facing amputation. Because what we're finding out is that type 2 diabetes in the young is having a much more aggressive impact on their vessels.
Yes.
And so I did hear in the session that they were playing around with 3D printer, for example, to try and make some different coloured devices, those great big foot casts.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That make them more likely for kids to wear, because...
That's a great idea.
How uncool would it be?
I know, a Zimmer boot. They're so uncomfortable.
And I do wonder how many podiatrists and all of us have ever tried one.
Yeah, I've certainly seen them. I actually haven't put my foot in one, but they just look uncomfortable to me.
And I saw a grumpy pumper. Yeah. He was walking around.
Yes.
Because he has had a complication with his foot. And one thing they said last night that was interesting was how people can get really used to walking around in these devices, then they start to be inefficient because they get damaged, and so they're not taking the pressure off so much.
Yes, and that they also said that because they're supposed to not be weight bearing, they start to get a lot of hip joint dysplasia and back issues because they're not centered correctly, because they've got one foot higher than the other foot, and it causes all sorts of issues. And,
oh yeah, it would.
Yeah, and the other thing that I took home from last night was really interesting, in that they're not safe at work, so they often can't go to work, so they don't wear them. Jumping out of bed to treat a hypo again, and so they're not going to put their whole boot on. That's a really interesting thing, Jane. I don't ever jump out of bed to treat a hypo. I have hypo staff right beside my bed. I'm amazed at the amount of people that have to climb down the stairs. And that was the example she used last night. Yeah. Someone had to climb down the stairs to treat a hypo.
Which means that they're not getting the appropriate education. So
Correct. Last
night also we got to hear some language that shocked and amazed us in acute care presentation around the foot. And one of the really big representations of people facing up to the amputations and these chronic ulcers that need healing is men who have diabetes, who are single, who are living on their own and have mental health issues. A lot of people with mental health problems, more likely to smoke, more likely to drink alcohol. So if we know that that group of people is high risk, then when you hear someone say in a session that they were there because they had failed
yes
in their diabetes treatment,
Yes.
And it was like a message that comes up saying, diabetic failed.
Yes.
And it was very confronting. I mean, we were really quite shocked when we heard someone actually say that in a presentation.
Yes. Particularly coming from the ADC, where there's so much understanding that that language is no longer acceptable. Mm-hmm. And yet we're still talking diabetes complications in the same type of forum, and yet that was something that was presented in the exact opposite way. Mm. I find difficult. I actually found it a little bit difficult to swallow last night, really.
I don't think we did swallow it, really.
I don't think we... It was quite interesting.
I think we did bring them to account with some of that, and the fact that primary care we need to be focusing on. And at the time, I sent a tweet out asking a group of people for their top three radical ideas around how we support people who are at high risk. We talk about this 4,400 amputations in people with diabetes each year, and Diabetes Australia are launching the fact they're going to be doing a big project around this. We need to start evaluating the profile of the people, because I suspect that there's an overrepresentation of people with a similar profile, and we need to be designing strategies to get to people with that profile much earlier. And the responses that came back on Twitter, we're talking about some of the strategies that have been done in the UK. And one was that they targeted the social workers and people who are working in mental health around having a look at people's feet, but making sure if they were limping or they look anything unusual, to trigger getting them reviewed quickly.
Yes.
They halved the number of amputations in that service by doing that.
Through social workers.
Through the social workers being educated.
Yeah.
And knowing in a practical way how to support that person with mental health problems who also has diabetes, who's also at risk of the chronic ulcer.
That just makes reasonable sense, though,
doesn't it?
Yeah. And the other thing I found, particularly last night, was there's a very large disconnect between the high-risk support services and the low-risk.
And what role does primary care have?
An enormous
ongoing
role. An enormous
even
role.
Even in the high-risk person.
Yes, and that's what we're now seeing, a failure of the system. Mm. Not a failure of the person.
No.
Never a failure of the person. It's a failure of the system to not better support that person, because they can't go to hospital, and that's what one of the nurses that works with chronic ulcers were saying. They don't belong, because it's not an acute setting, it's a chronic setting where these people need to be better supported, and they don't know where to go.
And so they come to casualty, and then they're admitted to the vascular ward ready for an amputation, essentially, because everything has spiraled so quickly.
Yes.
But it hasn't really. It started spiraling many, many years before.
That's correct.
In people not identifying people who aren't engaging with the health services, whose levels are staying high, who's got other health issues that are keeping them at higher risk as well.
Yes, so better support.
Got to turn it upside down. Like, sure,
absolutely,
you've got to do the high risk stuff, but we seriously need to be taking a closer look at what we're not getting right in protecting these people from much earlier.
That's correct. Yes.
So, like we've said a number of times, we always have to go back and look at what we're not doing.
Yes. It's not necessarily just about the person, it's also about us as healthcare professionals. We're not supporting these people well enough. If they're not engaging, there's a reason that they're not engaging.
And we've got to get smarter at getting some research around what's needed.
Yes.
And so I think, especially for men who don't have someone permanent in their life or being involved in their life, they are at really high risk of cardiovascular disease, renal failure, and also the ulcers if they're overrepresented in the microvascular area. And I'm hoping that the work Diabetes Australia are going to do will include some of these high-risk groups that the group last night were able to say, bang, 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 bang.
Yes, but again, as you say, they're overrepresented because they're the ones landing in their services.
Yeah.
It's all the people that we still need to target to stop them getting there.
Mm. I guess on that note, Kiralee, what we've done today is have a bit of a chat around the health issues associated from an acute point of view and from our own personal experience around hypoglycemia unawareness and the role of CGM and
glucagon.
Because it's not the person with diabetes who needs to give it.
Correct.
It's someone else.
It's the third person.
And then we've also looked at the foot to look at people with diabetes and their feet.
Yes, it's also about the peripheral vascular and we go searching for blood clots. But it's not just that, it's also about peripheral vascular disease in general.
And the impact on feeling things.
Correct.
That's it from us for podcast number 3, Kiralee.
Yeah, P1 and P2.
P1 and P2. Now, we don't know who should be which one. We'll work that out at some stage. But
I think we should keep them guessing, don't you?
I think we should too.
Unless someone's got a suggestion as to who should be what.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, maybe not.
Have a look on the website, www.edhealth.com.au. Search for P2 podcast and you will find the other podcast, but also the information that we're going to add from this week's podcast. It's goodbye from
Kiralee.
And it's goodbye from Jane. Bye.
Bye.